So what does wellness mean to you?
Welcome to another edition of the Wellness Wednesdays podcast. I'm your host, Eric Clard. This week, I've got a special guest all the way from Nova Scotia, former champion runner who's now turned entrepreneur and a professional shoe fitter, shall we say. And he's also become a pretty good friend over the years. And without any further ado, Luke McDonald, welcome.
Thanks, Eric.
So we're going to talk about running. We're going to talk about Sparks Fly. You're going to tell us a bit more about that and how you got involved. And what I'd really love for people to leave today with is how to at least know the right questions to ask when they're looking for shoes. So can you, and I can't do your running background justice, can you kind of provide a quick Cole's Note version of how you got into running probably a couple years ago and what's kept you running all these years?
Well, I started running in grade two. I ran two laps fairly quickly around our school, Mary Lawson Elementary. And I remember Mr. McLean, my gym teacher at the time, said, make sure you pace yourself. And I said, forget it. I'm just going to run as fast as I can around the school twice. And I didn't pace myself. And I ran around really fast. And he said, you're a pretty good runner. I said, great. And so that was the first time I ever really ran, other than outside of play. So that's how it started. And then I ran cross country, ran track during the summers. From the time I was 12 to 18, I traveled with a gentleman named David Kilroy, who took me out to all the Run Nova Scotia series races throughout the province. And I was a pretty good junior runner. If all the best junior runners were at any one particular race, I probably would have been fourth or fifth at the time. And I've basically stuck with it since then, with, you know, a decade or two off along the way. But outside of that, that's how the running started.
And what do you think keeps you enthused after all these years in the running world?
Well, I've actually had to be re-infused because I was off for quite a few years. In 1985, I went to Australia to see how fast I could run. I was in Canberra. I took a year off of school from St. Mary's because my mom and dad went on a teacher's exchange. And I knew my hero at the time was Robert DiCostella, and I knew he trained out of Canberra. And I said, well, I'm going to weasel my way into his running club, which I did. But when I was there, sadly, I got mono and I couldn't run. And so I changed running habits to beer habits. So I was in Australia as a 21-year-old and got a job and a girlfriend. And I decided to party instead of run.
Yeah. Funny how beer and girls usually kind of veer your way sometimes from running or any other exercise.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the story of a lot of Canadian kids, and it's the demise of hockey, soccer, football.
Girls and beer, yeah. Trouble.
Yeah.
Trouble.
And then how'd you get into being a shoe store owner?
I started selling shoes basically the day I turned 16 years old. I bought my first pair of shoes from the store I now own, Aerobics First, and I was treated like a king. And I said, geez, do you know what? I think that'd be a good job being a shoe fitter. And so I fell into it naturally. It's not by happenstance. I love to sell shoes. But I didn't get to work at Aerobics First. I just knew that that was the ultimate job, basically, was I hoped at that young age that I could own Aerobics First.
Dreams do come true.
Dreams do come true. But, man, it's a lot of work to make a dream come true. So I ended up working for a guy named Dean Hartman, who owned a small sporting goods store called A1 Athletic Wear on Main Street, which was only a mile away from my house. And so he hired me, and it was actually 2 days after I turned 16, because it was a Thursday. The Tuesday was Tuesday, they weren't open at night.
Okay.
So I had to come back Thursday and work my first night shift.
Yeah. And it's been, and I know Aerobics First has kind of grown, and you've got another store, so it's been kind of, how long have you been involved with the shoe world?
Well, it's 36 years this year for me selling shoes, and I've been a partner at Aerobics First for 10 years.
Okay.
So this is the this is my first decade at Aerobics First.
And here's to many more. Full disclaimer, I'm a huge fan of Aerobics First. Whenever I'm teaching in Halifax, I try to drop by. I send all my clients out east there because I know that they're going to get great service. And they also, your folks know what they're doing with
yeah,
people.
Yeah, we work hard at it.
Yeah. And it's also like goes back to the basics of customer service. Like you spend, and I think like most good shoe stores is you spend, you know, half hour to an hour with people. Well, I mean, depending on the person,
it depends.
It's not like, here's a shoe, get out of here. Like it's right. More, what are you looking for? What kind of shoe have you had? Like you ask questions, which is kind of rare, and especially in the big box stores.
Oh yeah. And again, sort of full disclosure, I actually come from big box. A1 Athletic Wear became Sports Experts, which eventually became Sport Check. And so I know how both sides of the fence operate. And I have no problems or issues with the Sport Check stores at all. You know, they can offer good pricing. Their knowledge, I think, is a little better than most people expect. But when they run into problems with certain issues like extra wide feet, bunions, stuff like that, it becomes a little bit harder to deal with if you don't have the array of shoes that we have.
Yeah.
So we'll have 2A, B, D, 2E, 4E, 6E. We'll have underlay materials to change the width of the shoes. We're okay with cutting shoes if they have to be cut. Doing stuff like that is a little outside the box for a big box store because they just can't decide to, you know, cut a shoe just to help a customer. You know, that's a hard thing to do.
And I know that, like, I've had friends that worked at big box stores and like they're basically told what to sell and they're basically told, and again, it might not be in every single store, but
yeah.
And a lot of times like, well, no, this month we're trying to, and then the salespeople are already sold the bill of goods. They're like, well, this new technology and whether the folks are runners or not, they don't really know what's needed.
Yeah, they'll tend to know the technologies of the shoe, but may not necessarily know how the foot works within the shoe or in how the shoe and the foot should work together is basically one unit. And so they may not get that information. And we draw on our network for that information. So as an example, this weekend we were at the running injury clinic course for physiotherapists. We work with JF and Blaze, and they keep us up on the latest sports science. And so it's really interesting to work with a really strong network of healthcare professionals. So that's, we don't necessarily have to give the detailed answers. We just have to be resourceful. And I think our greatest strength at our store is that if we don't know the answer, we can get the answer really fast by the best people in the city.
That's awesome. And some of the best people in the country too. You mentioned Blaze. I've had the pleasure of taking Blaze's course and
yeah.
He's another great resource. And whenever people come through my Chi Running course, I send them the link to his website because it's
right.
Some of the best stuff around.
And we are considered specialists on his website. I don't necessarily agree with everything that's on it because, again, his stuff tends to be more pure science, but we're a mesh of science and human behavior.
Yeah.
You know, because there's, you know, some people just won't wear a certain color shoe and you have to be able to deal with that. And if that's not exactly the right shoe scientifically, you still have to work with that customer.
People will be people. Some people don't want to wear bright blue or bright yellow or white or whatever.
I don't care what anybody says. Color matters.
Yeah. And I tried not to. And as you can see by some of my shoes, they're not the prettiest shoes. But again, for me, and I've also taken Blaze's course, and I'm also like, comfort is king.
Yeah.
And I got some of this stuff from you in terms of, you know, making sure the shoe fits like a slipper, not having your foot, you know, fit the shoe.
Right. A shoe should fit like a mitten, not like a glove.
Yeah.
Your foot should be free to move within the shoe. And if it's restricted in any fashion by the shoe itself, your foot's turned into a brick. It's not the shock absorber and the rigid lever it should be in order to propel you forward. And so a lot of that stuff, we have to explain to customers every single time how their foot should actually function within the shoe. And when they see it, you can absolutely see the light bulb goes off and they just have an aha moment. They say, wow, oh, that's how it works. And then you can explain why a little bit of heel slippage when the shoe is brand new is actually an indicator that the shoe fits. And then you tell them not to clutch their toes if they feel their heel lift, because at the front end, the shoe hasn't learned to flex where your foot is going to flex it. So, you know, after just 2 or 3 hours of booting around in the shoe's going to feel different than it does immediately in the store. So at our place, we have a fit guarantee where you can wear the shoe for 5 or 6 runs to make sure that after that amount of time, it should be working, you know, very nicely with your foot. And if it isn't, we'll exchange it. But we have to be the ones driving the bus. If you come in and you demand a certain size and a certain color and a certain brand, you're driving the bus. We're not necessarily going to fit guarantee that.
Yeah.
Because if you're wearing them too small, you're likely to blow the shoe up. If the shoe doesn't blow up, then your foot is likely to become injured. So as long as we're allowed to drive the bus, we'll guarantee the fit. And so people just won't go wrong. Yeah.
And so what should people look for in a shoe other than color?
What should they? I don't know what they should look for in a shoe necessarily.
Or in terms of fit?
The biggest thing is that they're buying them big enough. And so as an example, if you pull the insole out of your current shoe and you stand on top of it, you should see at least a centimeter between the end of your toe and the end of the insole. And your foot, you should see all your toes embedded on your insole. If you see the footprint of your shoe, of your foot on the insole, and half the toes are missing, the shoe is significantly too small. It's not odd for us to increase a person's shoe size by a size and a half. That in and of itself can be problematic. We'll tell the person that they should be in a shoe that's a size and a half bigger. But sometimes we have to get there half a size at a time. So it could take 18 months or so in order for that person to get into the right size shoe. And you just sort of have to hold their hands through it. But once they know that you're willing to negotiate on fit a little bit, as long as you're moving forward, that's what we're aiming for. And so that's the most important thing. Because I think all the shoes are good. It's just what matches your foot shape, your foot type, your skill, and all that stuff, and the distance that you're on. I think most people significantly overrun their goals, or they're just running too far given their physical shape.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. With chi running, it's all about minimalist and less is more.
Right.
I remember when I first started training for Ironman and marathons, I used to run a lot.
Right.
Now I mean, I'm running very minimally, and I can still run the distances. It's just, it doesn't seem to be the need anymore. But a lot of it, too, is mental and how you get into it. But what are your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts, I've changed significantly over the last few years. When I came back this time, I did not want to have another 10 years off. I was told I wouldn't be able to run again because of chronic hip issues. And then I ran into a gentleman named Daniel Crumback, and he came into the shop and basically said, you don't even have a running injury. You have a recurring workplace injury because of the way you get on your knees when you're selling shoes. Yeah. He said, your left leg is cocked out and you have a torn medial meniscus from the lateral horn. So what you have to do is strengthen that. And he gave me a stool to sit on when I sell shoes, and he gave me a pole to do the exercises with in order to strengthen glute med. And I did it. But then he also now had to teach me how to lose weight according to heart rate. Yeah. And so he brought down my zone. So I did 85% of my effort in zone 1 and 2 and really didn't do anything outside of that for a year until I lost 30 or 40 pounds. And once I got down to 170, he gave me a 7-week training course for a 5K. And lo and behold, in 7 weeks after, you know, 10 years of not running, I was able to run a sub 20 minute 5K, which isn't too bad for 50. Well, at the time I was 47.
It's not too bad for anyone.
Well, yeah, I was pretty pleased. And then my goal changed to I didn't want to be the guy that says, okay, I've done a 5K, now let's do a 10K, let's do a half marathon, let's do a marathon, let's do an ultra. I said, I wanted to run 5Ks for the rest of my life. How many years consecutively can I run under 20? And so now it's 4 consecutive years that I've run under 20 minutes, and I really only run 10 to 12 kilometers a week. And then I use an Elliptigo and a Bionic runner to get long cardio in, which can go from 45 minutes to 7 or 8 hours. And then I'm running without impact. And then I couple that with exercises from my physio, catching physiotherapy, which is just around the corner. And I do my exercises religiously, and I run as little as I can to be as fast as I can. And then I use bikes to get the long stuff in.
Can you tell, I know what those two bikes are, but for the people at home who have no clue, can you explain what those are?
Well, an Elliptigo, I got an Elliptigo 7 years ago or 6 years ago, and it's basically an elliptical machine on wheels. And the second I saw it, I said, I know I have to. I have to have a couple of those. So there was a conference in Texas that I went to, and lo and behold, Elliptigo was showing there. And so I bought two right away, and I named them Jake and Elwood, and then I rode away my blues.
Okay.
That's a true story. And so it's an elliptical on wheels, and the Bionic Runner is not the same company, but it actually has a true running motion. So it's a bike that's significantly slower. So on an elliptical, I can do, 50K and average 30 kilometers an hour. My average training ride is probably 25 and a half or 26 kilometers an hour. Where on the Bionic Runner, I can average 25 kilometers an hour, but my average training ride is about 22 and a half kilometers an hour. But it's a true running motion stand-up bike. Mm-hmm. So these are bikes with no seats,
okay,
basically, which is a huge global trend right now.
Yeah.
But wheels are a trend as well. I shouldn't say a trend. It's a movement. There's a lot of cyclists. There's a lot of these other options for runners so they can continue to run. And that's simply because the baby boomers are getting old. Like, I'm the bottom end of the baby boomers, born in 64 and 52 years old. Yeah. So there's a whole age wave going through that are not able to run as much because they want to run too much.
Yeah.
And so if they could balance that out a little bit more with shorter distance runs,
they'll
be able to run for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
But most people are quitting way too soon because they can't do 10K, they can't do half. They don't understand that a 5K is just a beautiful lifetime distance.
And
physically, it's all you need.
Yeah, and running 3K is awesome.
Oh, running.
Like there's no, like, I've been lucky, I've done most of the events, but sometimes I enjoy going for, a 2K or 3K run, or now, even now, I'm doing walking, which, if you would have told me five years ago, like, I'm walking for fun, I'd be like, what's wrong with you?
Oh, like, listen, I can tell you. My last year, I ran a race in Riverport. It was one of the Run Nova Scotia races. And I got down there with our mutual buddy, Scott Brown.
Yeah.
And so I got my fastest little racing suit on, and I'm doing the warm-up and the sprints, and I think I'm looking pretty fast and stuff. I'm ready to tear it up. It was a flat course, so I was pretty sure I was going to break 20 minutes again. And so I was pretty confident, but Scott, he showed up and we're sort of talking, and then we're a little bit at the back and we just start to talk with this generation that's going to travel the 5K, but there's four generations of them. And so we're just enthralled with the conversation. And Scott, sort of poked me on the elbow and said, hey, Luke, the race is going. And I looked up and the race had already been gone for 3 minutes. And so we ended up running the race, and it was just a walk jog basically. And coming into the last, the home stretch, there was 500 meters to go, and I'm looking at the finish line. And I see this beautiful town. I see the river, the beautiful bridge, the city hall, all the people clapping us in. And I stopped and I turned around and I took a selfie backwards of the finish line, stopping forward momentum for the first time in my racing career. And I just said, wow, who is this guy?
Yeah.
And I said, I liked it. And it was probably my favorite race I've ever run. And it certainly wasn't a race.
Yeah.
It was just entirely enjoyable. Yeah. And that was the first time I'd done that. And I've done hundreds of races.
Yeah. It's funny how, like, your racing career, if you can call it that, because, I mean, I'm not as fast as you, and I just run mostly for fun. And sometimes, back in the day, I used to try to always beat my time. But now I just run to keep my brain intact or feed my brain. And that's partly from the book that you talked about that you recommended, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. How long is it?
Which one was that?
Spark
by John Ratty. Yeah. Yeah.
And then actually, it's going to bring us a nice little segue into Spark Bikes. So you've helped this movement. And it's, just so you know, I'm a huge fan of that stuff. I've tried to spread the word a little bit, but it's some amazing stuff. Cool. Can you tell us a bit more about Sparks Fly?
Well, I have a buddy who I ran with in high school. His name is John Carson. I shouldn't say ran with. He was significantly faster than I was. But we knew each other back then, and then we've sort of always stayed in touch. Like, we show up at the Dartmouth Natal Day road races, and we'd run those, and we'd touch base and see where we're at. And then he just said, Luke, I got this idea, and you have to come see this guy named Dr. Stuart Shanker talk at a collision I'm having in Cambridge. And I said, well, number one, what's a collision?
Yeah.
And he just said, it's basically a think tank for education based on movement sciences. So we're trying to figure out how we can get kids moving in classes, because it's not necessarily phys ed or the traditional gym class that kids have to do. In order to learn most effectively, they have to move all the time, meaning they should be allowed to fidget and they should be able to move in the classroom. And I said, really? And I was instantly intrigued by that concept, because I was one of the kids that was told to sit down, be quiet, and don't move.
And so was I.
And I was a mess. I didn't enjoy school at all.
Yeah.
And when I heard that that was a thing, I said, I'm into this. Yeah. And so I flew, you know, I flew up on my own dime. On a big airplane, didn't have Wi-Fi in it, but it was pretty amazing to be on something metal in the sky.
In the sky, yeah.
Flying. Yeah. I think there's Louis C.K. joke in there somewhere. Yeah. But anyway, I went to this thing, and when Dr. Shanker spoke for the first 45 minutes, I was just mesmerized, because he explained my entire school life, which culminated in flunking out in 1987. I mentioned briefly in 85 about getting into the beer and not running. Well, when I came back to school in 86, it was the first year I'd never ran in school, because I would run with school and all that stuff. And so I essentially traded beer for running, and that was not a good trade.
Yeah.
And then my marks really dropped, because I couldn't concentrate. I wasn't training at all.
Yeah.
And then 87, I couldn't get the marks.
Yeah.
And then I just decided that I was going to go solidly after my goal of being a manager of a shoe store. And that's where I worked. I continue to work for Dean at Sports Experts. And I said, well, I didn't really care that much, because that's what I was going to do. I didn't necessarily need a degree to have that. So I sort of sloughed that off. But when I really thought about it, I said, you know, it's interesting that my stopping the running coincided with my poor marks. And at the end of the collision, I said, you know, there's going to be something that comes up that allows me to really make this movement happen in schools. Long story short, John Carson found a mini silent exercise bike for kids, and he described it to me, and I said, John, I know exactly what to do with that. And so I took it to one of the schools that I have a running and reading program in. I gave it to Principal Woodbury. She took it for an afternoon, put three kids on it that were having anxious moments, let's say, and they all immediately calmed down. One girl, for the first time in her life or in her school life, in front of the principal, said, this bike makes me feel happy. And when Principal Woodbury described that afternoon to me, I said, oh, my jumpins, I got something here. I'm also from a family of teachers, so I have three sisters that are very good teachers. My mom and dad were both educators. And so I had a good baseline to know when I thought I had something, I was pretty sure I had it. A long story, a little bit longer. We end up doing one bike, and then I did a fundraiser where we raised $13,000, did 10 bikes. Then we did another fundraiser where we raised $37,000, and it was 26 or 27 bikes. And it just went from there. Now there's 1,600 bikes across Canada. Every school in the HRSB has a bike. There's small ones, there's big ones. And they're really, really working well. And ultimately, the concept of the bike is to keep it in the classroom where the kid has the opportunity to decide to get on the bike themselves. It reduces their anxiety so they don't leave the class. They don't lose the teaching opportunity. And what actually happens for a lot of the kids is they ask and start asking their first lesson appropriate question. And that's simply because they're moving. And that creates the opportunity for them to think and participate. And it's not a punishment. It's like the kids love the bikes. The teachers that understand self-regulation and the teachings of Dr. Shanker, they know how to employ it. And it's been just spectacular from all the feedback I have anyway.
I wish that would have been around when I was in school, because I think I would have paid a lot more attention. I got to read the book when you recommended it to me, and it really changed the way I exercise. Because again, I used to exercise to try to lose weight or look good, and more research. That's another story about how that's actually exercising and doesn't really help you with those. Well, a little bit, but not as much as people think. But I find exercise now, I just go and feed my brain. And right. I have all my best ideas, all my best. I figure out my life when I'm out for a run, when I'm out for a cycle, whenever I can get the...
Oh, yeah. And that's universal. That's...
But now there's some research behind it. It's one of those things that when you're a kid, you're like, oh, that feels good. But like you don't know why.
Right.
But now like that book really put everything in perspective. Like, here are the reasons why. Here are the reasons why you're not depressed, or you're less likely to be depressed when you're active. Here are the reasons why you're more likely to have better health, better outcomes.
The interesting part about that is, in the schools that I was targeting the Spark Bikes for, the same schools that I was targeting the youth running series, why aren't certain kids running these races? They can run them for free. There's a $3 or $4 charge to run the race. Or if you show up and say, hey, I just want to run the race, we wouldn't charge. But none of the poor kids or the kids from the other side of the track, they weren't participating. And so that's why I did the running and reading programs in the three toughest schools in Halifax. And again, the kids were great and we were doing these classes. But what I discovered was there's no culture of fitness in their households. And so there has to be an opportunity to speak to those kids about the importance of fitness. So it's not just get on the bike. It's get on the bike, and this is why the bike works. And then that becomes transferable knowledge home. So we're actually trying to create new DNA for these kids, because they're the first generation, often, of having an understanding of what fitness can do for them in the future and for the future generations. It's hard for them to go home and teach their parents to go out for a run. But there's a very interesting stat that I heard at the youth running series at Banquet last year. And 52% of the parents that take their kids to a youth running series event who weren't runners become runners.
Wow, that's amazing.
So that's a staggering stat. I haven't seen the exact science on it, but when you hear that 52% will start, take that kid that's learned why exercise is important because they sat on a Spark Bike, they take it home, and they start to run or play or do a little bit more than they normally would. That can inspire a parent. If they can inspire a parent, that's going to make them significantly more likely to be able to have a culture of fitness at home. But it actually has to start with a kid. And so I think having the kid as the teacher is very powerful.
Very cool. I think the one nice thing about being friends with you is we go for runs and talk about all this stuff, and all the cool things are happening. What's What's really cool in your life now and in the wellness sphere that you can talk about? What's really cool that's happening?
Oh, I think the coolest thing that's happening is actually, it's a little bit on the mental health side of the house. But what we're doing, I do the same thing in the Gambia that I do here in Halifax. I'm reducing childhood anxiety in schools by providing water.
Okay.
Rebuilding libraries, doing stuff like that, paying some kids' ways through school because they could get plucked out of class at any time because their parents can't afford to keep them in school. Yeah. So it's a completely different set of anxieties, but it's still anxiety. Yeah. But what's interesting is because of our ability to communicate back and forth, we can now have the grade threes in the Gambia speak to the grade threes in Halifax and have a conversation about health and wellness. And that is really cool. We have a project that's coming up, which is version 2 of Sparks Fly. And it doesn't have anything to do with exercise. It's actually science, where there's Suda, who's a percussionist. She developed a shaker that if you shake it for an 11 minutes, it provides an hour worth of power. And so we're going to be building these things in schools in Halifax, making videos of how we build them and then send them to our Gambian counterparts so they can have power in order to see their way home at night.
Very cool.
And so that's really cool. Yeah. But what we're going to be wondering is what are they going to trade us?
Okay.
And they'll trade us their culture and their stories for something that's physical. Yeah. And then we can trade back with ideas and music and stuff like that. And I think when our kids see how they can help their kids and their kids can see how they help our kids, that is going to be a game changer. And it's really easy to do. And that's what we're going to start in September.
Yeah. Very cool. Before we finish, if I had to get you to define wellness, what does wellness mean to you?
I don't think I can.
No, it's a tough one.
It's a tough one. I think it's probably just being able to be peaceful, like our run today. You know, everything we did today was just, it was awesome, but it was busy. And then we're at the airport, and we're thinking, okay, there's aviation museum and stuff like this. And so I could go in there and I could look around, read all kinds of stuff, and that would be great. But then you pull up and then you say, hey, we're just going to go. Like, I think I'm just at an airport. And then we run over the one little knoll onto a beautiful trail along the Ottawa River. And we run for 45 minutes. That was wellness. That was just peaceful, easy talking, no stress. We ran around. We extended the run a little bit. And it was just, you know, the ability to do that is wellness. To say, do you know what? 44 minutes. How far do we go? I have no idea. Who cares?
Let's just go out.
The ability to be able to move like that is, we're in a pretty good place.
Very cool. And where can people find out more about Aerobics First, about Sparks Fly, about all the cool stuff you're doing in Gambia?
Aerobicsfirst.com is our store homepage. You can, on Facebook, you can look at Sparks Fly.
So is it facebook.com/sparksfly?
Yeah, okay. That's right. And then the same thing. The other one is a long one, but it's called the Father Tony Pamadou Solar Hub. So good luck with that.
Okay.
I don't know if you can share links on this, but
I can, yeah.
Yeah, if you can share that one, that's really interesting.
Yeah, I remember because I did a very small part in, I sponsored a bike, and then I also helped sponsor those soccer uniforms, I think.
Oh, yes, yeah.
But
yeah,
nothing compared to all the stuff that you're doing, but it's the least that we could do.
Well, the mantra with all this stuff is that going back to the bikes a little bit, I had two or three opportunities to get fairly big donations. And I made a decision not to take those bigger donations because if I drop $30,000 worth of bikes from a big company into the schools, the individual parents, teachers, and fundraisers would have stopped raising money, right? So we've had, of the 1,600 bikes, about 1,000 of them were raised individually, which is pretty incredible. Yeah. So that is, it was a one bike at a time attitude, just like we were doing one school at a time, just like we're doing one kid at a time in the Gambia. And, you know, the theory behind that is simple micro philanthropy.
Well, and you feel like I feel connected to that bike.
Oh,
like
100%. Yeah. Well, your name's on it.
Yeah.
So there you go.
I'm going to have to go visit one day and go try to
spin on that baby.
Anyway, thanks a lot for sharing some of your stories and obviously your passion for fitness, wellness, running. And we wish you the best in all the future.
Thank you very much, Eric. It's a great afternoon.